How to ask for help when you're just starting. This is the Early Days Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome to the Early Days Podcast, the show about the hustle, the excitement, the doubts, the success, the failures, the ups and downs of building a business from scratch. My name is Marin, and with my co-founder Julian, we interview fellow entrepreneurs about their experience of starting businesses. As we're building our own apparel company and documenting our early days, we wanted to go behind the scenes with other entrepreneurs and find out what their early days, weeks, months, and years were like. On today's episode, we have Jackie Fast, founder of Slingshot Sponsorship, Rebel Pie, and a participant on The Apprentice. Her first business, Slingshot Sponsorship, was started in her bedroom in 2010 with just a laptop and £2,000. 6 years later, Jackie sold Slingshot for millions, having worked with notable international clients including Sir Richard Branson, The Rolling Stones, Shell, Red Bull, and many more. Jackie is now the founder of Rebel Pie, an ice wine brand. Relatively unknown, ice wine production is the rarest and riskiest in the world. With this exceptional product and brand, Jackie is slowly conquering the world and is also a participant on The Apprentice. If that was not enough, Jackie is also a best-selling author with her book Pinpoint. In our conversation, we touched on the early days of Jackie's career as the founder of Slingshot, how she exited the business, took time off to decide what to do next, how she started Rebel Pie, and her experience on The Apprentice. We also talk about the importance of asking for help, how to do sales, branding, and distribution, and much, much more. Now, without further ado, enjoy our conversation with Jackie Fast from Rebel Pie.
All right, so I'm hitting the record button as well. So we are now recording. Jackie, you can start by just introducing yourself briefly and what have you been doing over the past couple of months or years?
Sure. So my name is Jackie Fast. I am a Canadian living in London. I am probably best known for setting up an agency called Slingshot Sponsorship, which was a very successful company that was really niche in its sense in the fact that we just sold really high-level sponsorship deals across the world. I sold that company in 2016, and I set up my latest company called Rebel Pie, which is Canadian ice wine that's exclusively in Britain. The other thing you might have seen me is I'm on a television show on BBC One with The Apprentice. Very standard format that a lot of people probably are familiar with.
Oh, that's a really nice blurb. About the Slingshot Sponsorship Agency, can you tell us a little bit about it? How did you decide to start?
Absolutely. I mean, it's pretty well documented. I talk a lot about people that are very scared. They always ask me, you know, how did you take the leap? How did you take the step to go and set up your own business? Because it's so scary. And quite honestly, it's because nobody would hire me. I really didn't like my job. I had a horrible manager. And I tried to get another job in the same industry in sponsorship. And because my experience wasn't sport, which predominantly a lot of the agencies were at the time, and still very much are, I couldn't get an interview. And because of that, I was really stuck with, should I stay in this horrible work environment where I'm not my best self? I mean, I hated my manager. I didn't see a future, or try to do what I did until I figured it out. So I set up Slingshot more as a stopgap. I mean, I'm so, so grateful it was a successful company, but it really wasn't my initial intent.
Right. So, and when you were starting out, were you thinking about any of the, issues or insecurities around starting your own business? Did you start 100% dedicated to the agency, or were you having a,
and
was it a side project?
Yeah, it wasn't a side project in the fact that I had to set up Slingshot. So Slingshot evolved because I told my manager to do one, basically, and I was out of a job. And as a foreigner, you can't really do that. You have to have a visa, all that stuff. So I set up Slingshot as a necessity, so I had money to pay the rent and I would have a visa. I very luckily had clients, but I kind of thought that it would be a consulting gig. I set it out to be a consulting gig. I never thought it would be a big company. I mean, right. I didn't think I had the skills, quite frankly. I was 25 when I set it up. I had not very much experience. I was incredibly reticent. And if somebody said, you know, go set up a really big business, I would have said no. So it's coming from that place of not feeling confident in the fact that I could have done it is what makes me kind of tell everybody who's thinking about setting up or everybody who's a startup that they should do it. I mean, I don't think it's as hard as most people let on, but it does take a big, it takes a massive leap of faith.
Right. And when you started, did you start by yourself or you had other people to help you out?
I mean, it was just by myself. I set up my business with £2,000 and a laptop in a bedroom of a rented flat in Fulham, with no clients, no connections, no help, no support. So it was very, very scary, very, very scary. And I mean, it looks like I was really successful overnight, but I tell you that's not the case. I mean, I spent the first 2 years really concerned of whether or not I would pay the rent, really concerned about whether or not what I was doing was the right thing. I don't think we had our first client, which was WhatCar, for a year. Really, I was just doing like side projects here and there. So, yeah, I mean, it was all by myself. It was very lonesome. It was very scary.
Can you take us through that mindset of being those first few years, even if I mean, given that it was very difficult, how did you push through and how did you keep on going, just working towards the goal?
I mean, some of it was the fact that I really started believing in what I was doing. And the more, so what happened really is I set up my shop. Nobody wanted to buy. So I didn't have any clients, which meant I had a lot of time on my hands. And I had an ex-client who actually told me, you know, if you set up your own business, you need to be working all the time. And I really took that to heart. So any downtime I had, which was every second of every day because I didn't have clients, I spent that time writing about sponsorship, reading about sponsorship, commenting about sponsorship. So in that period of 6 months, I really felt like I educated myself a lot in where the market was. And I looked at where the skill sets I had gained from working at the Direct Marketing Association. And the more I read, the more I felt I had a really strong, I guess, presence, a really strong service, and a really strong product. And so actually, ironically, the longer I went without work, the more confident I felt about what I could do.
Right. And so when you started, how did you get your first client?
It was through a referral. No, actually, it wasn't. It was a woman called Amanda Anderson. I actually work with her now. She is a producer of big awards programs. She's excellent at what she does. And she was trying to figure out how to get more funding for her clients to spend more money on production. And she came across, I believe, an article or a blog I was writing. So I was writing a lot at the time about sponsorship without any clients, but writing a lot. And she had come across something I had written. And she called me and we had a really good chat. So she brought me in to kind of pitch my idea. And when I went into that meeting, you know, I really kind of sold the world to them. But the more that I spoke to them, the more I felt that I could help them, which was really, you know, positive for me because it made me feel a bit more confident in what I could deliver. Ironically, or like unbeknownst to me, is an agency that was doing something similar was also pitching against me, and they had 8 years more experience, loads of clients, loads of staff. But I pitched and I followed up and I really showed I was really hungry for that job. I think I reduced my fees. I mean, I felt so confident, and it took about 6 months. So I think I went into the pitch 6 months into setting up the slingshot, and I had them 6 months later. But for somebody to not have any clients, 6 months is a long time of being scared and worrying if you're going to pay the bills. But I was really determined, and I was really persistent, and I think that made a difference.
Yeah, I can tell for sure from what you're saying that you really have like a lot of determination and belief in what you were doing. I wonder, like, in the toughest and the hardest of times, when you know, things were looking bleak, what kept you going? Like, what was the main motivator or the North Star that was helping you move
forward? So I get asked a lot about what drives me in terms of determination. And I honestly don't have one answer for that, but I do strongly believe, and I believed very strongly in what I was doing. I felt really confident in my ability to deliver what I had promised my clients. And that's what I stuck to. And I thought if it wasn't going to be WhatCar, it would be somebody else who really got what we were trying to do. And I just needed that one person. I was lucky to get WhatCar as my first client. And they let me do what I wanted to do. And, you know, I proved a model. And following that, we were hugely successful.
Right. And how long did it take before you actually hired your first full-time employees?
I think a year. I had an intern, I think, at 6 months. She was in 3 days a week. But I didn't have an office at the time. So in meant meeting at a coffee shop. But I hired my very first employee, his name is Mark Milam, who's doing amazing things now, about a year in. On his previous experience, he was a ski instructor. and I mean, he really wanted to work there. I didn't really know why. But, you know, he's probably one of my most favorite employees. I mean, I love all my employees, but he definitely sticks out because as much as I took a chance on him, he did take a chance on us as well. But I gave him a break to work in sponsorship, and it was one of the best decisions I've ever done in my entire career.
Right. And I want to move the timeline a little bit forward, a couple of years. I think you started in 2010, correct?
2010, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And a couple of years after that, or like a few years ago, to be more precise, you sold the company, right?
Yeah, 2016.
Right. So what drove you to do that? At what point did you decide that it's time to do something else?
I mean, I was getting incredibly frustrated with doing a lot of stuff I wasn't initially very good at. As we grew, we started getting amazing clients, but we are very international. I was on a long haul flight at least once a week. I was barely sleeping. All my friends were having kids. I mean, I was working an insane amount. And, you know, I didn't have time to go to the dentist. I barely had time to get a haircut. And I loved what I was doing, but the more successful we got, the less time I had.
Right.
And I, you know, I mean, a smarter person would tell you that I wasn't skilled enough to create the business before and build the right foundation, hand it over. I mean, I would argue that there is a little bit of specialism in what I was doing that was difficult to train other people. I mean, there's a lot more things at play, but inevitably, I just had no time. And I was very tired. And I was doing a lot of management stuff, which is not my forte, as you will see in The Apprentice. I mean, I work incredibly well with certain people, but I'm not a cheerleader. I'm not the best team player. And I've always known that. But I was finding myself being more and more that type of person in the business and less the person that I enjoy doing. I mean, I love being out. I love being out, meeting clients, meeting people, going to events, you know, selling them stuff. I love that part of it. And actually, most of my day was, how do I manage the staff to get the best out of them? And I was doing management training and executive training. It wasn't making a difference because I'm a stubborn person, wasn't learning quick enough. And it's hard when you know what's wrong with your business and you don't have the skill set to fix it. And so kind of based on that, you know, I loved my employees and my employees deserved a lot more than that, really. And I just thought the business would be better, not better without me. I just thought I was just getting to a place I was unhappy and I wanted to do something that excited me. And I think I like being in an uncomfortable situation. That's when I work the hardest, is when I'm at my best. It's when I'm the most motivated. And with Slingshot, I mean, we were doing such a good job. I was a bit complacent. Clients loved me. Staff, I mean, they liked me. I mean, staff were happy with their jobs. And it just, you know, it just became too easy. And because of that, I wasn't doing my best work. And, you know, I'm not 60. I don't want to retire. I've got a lot of life left in me and a lot of work life left in me. And I personally want to get better in life and in business. And I didn't see myself growing as a person any further than what I had done.
Did you, when you started thinking about selling it, did you know what the next project would be that you would jump on, or were you kind of sold it and then thought about it?
So, great question, and it's one that nobody's asked me in public, so this is good.
Thanks. I'll take it.
That's your exclusive. Basically, I had no idea, and in a way, and it's very, very arrogant, I kind of thought something would just happen. I mean, I know a lot of people. I've been offered so many jobs along the way. And I just thought, you know, when the right thing comes along, I will know. But I mean, I'm still young, and life doesn't work like that. I'm like, you know, I'm beginning to learn that. And I came very close to investing in 3 or 4 businesses, and they all fell flat for one reason or another. And I got really, I don't want to say desperate, but I agreed with my husband to take a year off. And I wanted to take a year and do all the stuff I never got to do and take basically 10 years of holidays in 1 year. So, I mean, we were in like 40 countries in like 10 months, went to Burning Man, went did all these things. It's crazy thing that I never had the time to do because I was working so hard. And then I kind of came out of that and didn't have a job. And I really like working. I know it sounds super boring and sad. I do enjoy it. So I started getting really worried that I wouldn't have a job. And we very randomly were at a wine tasting, and somebody introduced us to ice wine, which is not a new introduction for me personally, because I'm Canadian. I've had ice wine many, many times. But what I hadn't known is the production, and this person was just talking ad nauseum, and I really fell in love with the story. But what was most intriguing to me is the discovery. For somebody, myself, I'm interested in wine. I'm very foodie. You know, I'm very happy to spend a lot of money on that kind of an experience. But for somebody who's Canadian, who's grown up with ice wine, whose parents buy ice wine, I never understood what makes it unique. And so I kind of felt like I discovered a product that's been there all along that nobody else has. And it was invigorating. I mean, it was unique. And honestly, that, you know, ice wine was exceptional. And I just thought, this is my new idea. So I, you know, very, very quickly, as a Jackie Fast does, you know, just jumped on it and launched the company while I was at Burning Man, basically. And we've only launched at the end of September when I got back in the UK. We kind of, it obviously coincides with The Apprentice, but the wine itself is phenomenal. And I'm a decent salesperson that I can feel like I can communicate the story, but it is a vastly different business to what I was doing before. And that's good because it makes me feel like how I felt when I started Slingshot. You know, I'm scared. I don't know if people will buy the bottles. I don't know if people will like it. I don't know what I'm doing most of the time.
Right.
And that's what drives me. I like that. I think that's the right setup for me as a person.
I think that's a very entrepreneurial trait, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody who sets up their own business is crazy.
Yeah. I think I'm very ignorant. So what is ice wine?
Ice wine is a... So I don't want to say sweet wine or dessert wine because that usually puts people off right away. But ice wine is created by leaving grapes on the vine until they freeze. And then they're pressed. So what that means is that because it's frozen, all the liquid gets sucked out of the grape, and what's left is everything that you taste with table wine. So all of the notes in terms of whether it's honey or papaya or tropical fruits, whatever you taste when you wine, but it's super intense. It's very, very rare. There's only about 300,000 liters exported from Canada, whereas if you compare it to other dessert wines like Sauterne, you know, millions are exported. So there's a rare factor, but what it is it's a beautiful, beautiful dessert wine. Or my specific dessert wine, or my rebel pie, is not sweet. So one of the reasons I would never order dessert wine, or buy it, or tell anybody about it, is because I don't have a sweet tooth like that. But what we've created is an ice wine made from Roussan. It's the only one in the world, and because it's more delicate, it's less sweet. So all you do is get this just intense, it's more like an intense wine, which is impossible to describe in my head or using my words. And you do really have to taste it or you have to buy a bottle, really. But that's the challenge, and that's what I love.
What did you find were the most transferable skills from your previous business to the new one?
I mean, the easy answer is my ability to sell, but I'm not entirely sure that's true at this stage. So we've only been going for 2 months, and the events that I have done I have had the feedback that I'm too salesy. And I'm pretty commercial and pretty salesy, so I can understand that. But I mean, I think one of the things to understand is, especially gone through Slingshot, is, I mean, I'm not going to get it right the first time. And even somebody who's set up a very successful business and sold that, I mean, I'm very patient with myself, but I'm also of the understanding that I don't have a lot of time, so I listen. You know, I'm very, very interested to hear what not only you guys would think about my wine. I should send you some, but you know, wine gurus and wine legends, but everyday people as well. And I've always felt that has helped a lot, is not thinking that I know everything. So listening is definitely a transferable skill. I mean, I know what worked last time, and I know how to divide my time, and I know in a way what made Slingshot successful, but that doesn't necessarily mean that will make Rubble Pie successful. So, and I, you know, we talked on it, but I wrote a lot, and that's what got me my first client. Somebody read a great blog about wine, and I'm trying to write about wine, but honestly, I'm not a master of wine, and I need to educate myself a lot more. So what I talk about is the business of wine, my personal journey about wine, because that's quite honestly the only thing I can talk about at this stage.
Right. So you touched on that. I'm quite curious. What's been your communication so far since the inception of the idea, since you announced publicly what you're going to do until today? What kind of marketing strategies have you been using?
I mean, I don't have one. I mean, you would think as a marketer, I should. It was a new idea. I mentioned I did create the label and the copy at Burning Man, which is maybe not the best place. You know, it really, I think when we first started out, I thought I would sell a lot to direct to consumer, especially with being on The Apprentice. I realized that's not at all the case. And actually what you need is people to recommend it. And people really take those recommendations to heart. So my sideline strategy, I'm really trying to get out there. I'm trying to speak to people about it. I'm at the moment doing this podcast, but I've got a bottle of open wine that I sent to a retailer to do a tasting. And it's really important for me to be in front of people, getting people to talk about it, getting people interested in it. And whether they like it or not, but everybody at the moment likes it, so thank God for that. But it's really about getting the product into people's hands.
It's incredible that you mentioned that, because that's exactly where we are at as well. And in our case, when we started, our initial thought was, we're just going to make our web shop and we're going to just do that and everything's going to be great. We're going to do some digital ads and people will come in. Turns out when you're selling a physical product, things don't work out this way. And especially when it comes to clothing and wine as well, I guess, when you need to experience the product, you really need to put it in people's hands. It's really, really important. We're kind of figuring that out right now. Yeah. We're starting to think as well, going to retailers and just doing something more with physical locations. In terms of distribution, when you started, did you start with a web shop only?
Yeah, so I sell my own wine, direct. So, yeah. I mean, it was really funny. I went to a restaurant in London. Actually, I'll name them to make them feel like they have to buy my wine. I was in Gymkhana, and, you know, they said, we love it. Where can I buy it? I'm like, me. And, you know, I come from a B2B business. So, you know, all this stuff about distribution and you know, it's very new to me. We don't. Our wine is very rare. We only have 1,600 bottles. So, I mean, I would bloody hand deliver them if I could. But, you know, I am personally selling them. I am personally doing it from my person, whether it's at events or events that we're hosting or at wine events, or we're selling it on the website. We don't have a distributor. We're speaking to Stockist at the moment. But it's very important for people to, you know, be brand ambassadors for your brand, and I don't think I understood that, and I mean that is something that I'm learning every day.
And how do you go about educating those people to tell the right story? Because I know from experience it's very hard to translate a lot of the context that you have and the history that you have with your own company or brand, especially to get other people excited. How do you go about to communicate that to them?
So, I mean, working with the right people. So I was very fortunate that I have a great black book, you know, and a lot of people are interested in what I do. So that's helpful. Now, we just had a huge press launch yesterday with admissions. I should name drop, actually. It'd be great for Roger. Roger Jones, who I set up Rebel Pie, I sent an email to everybody who I'd been affiliated with Slingshot saying, this is my new company. I have no idea what I'm doing. If you can help, please help me. And Peter Raymond, who is the educator for a board that I sit on, the European Sponsorship Association. His brother-in-law is Roger Jones. And Roger Jones happens to be a huge wine legend, Michelin star chef, owns a restaurant. He's fabulous. And he was the first meeting I had. And I'm so lucky. Going back to one of your original questions is what kind of lessons would you take? I mean, I ask for help constantly. I mean, if it was you on the street, I will look to get help. Because I mean, you need to have the help and the support, and nobody's an expert. And I asked for help, and I got some amazing help, and that's really helped me talk to the right people, who will hopefully talk to more right people, and hopefully everybody will talk about loving.
Right. No, that's great. And have you at a certain point, felt uncomfortable to ask for that help?
No, never.
Okay, so I think you're like naturally born salesperson, I guess.
No, I think where people have a hesitation about asking for help is they don't want to look stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I look stupid most of the time. I mean, I don't know if you've seen The Apprentice. I do look stupid. I'm okay with that. I mean, I have a pretty good sense of self, so thank my mother for that. But I mean, I don't have it all figured out. And you have to accept that, and it's okay to not know stuff.
Right.
So I will always ask for help. I mean, if I knew all the answers, I don't even think some of the biggest business minds in the world have all the answers.
Right.
So I think you just have to, you know, be a bit forgiving really with yourself and where you are at any stage.
Yeah, I guess it's an ego thing as well, kind of just being hesitant to ask for help as if you kind of don't need help, but then you need to be more humble and do ask for that help, because there's a lot of people that actually like helping, so why not kind of have a win-win situation?
I know, but everybody needs help. And I'll be honest, when you can help somebody, most people are happy to do that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I think I was going to say that one of the most common things I see when we talk to other entrepreneurs or just read about it is almost everybody who's doing something new doesn't really know what's going on or is figuring it out as it goes along. So I think it's absolutely fine. And putting yourself in that position is quite natural.
One of the things that you have to remember, though, as well, and I mean, this is a podcast that goes back to people, I think it's a misconception to think that people who aren't startups have it all figured out. You know, startups, of course, it's new and you don't have it figured out. But I mean, Elon Musk doesn't have it all figured out. Richard Branson, I know personally, doesn't have it all figured out, because it's impossible. It's impossible to know everything about everything.
Yeah.
So it's okay. It's so okay to ask for help.
Yeah. And you should put yourself into those uncomfortable situations if you want to grow as well. I think that's kind of one of the really, really important traits that our guests that we've interviewed as well shared. Now, going to The Apprentice, and I mean, you can just share as much as you can, of course. How did that opportunity come about?
I mean, it didn't really come about. I applied. I wasn't working, so I think I mentioned I took a year off after I sold and left the job to do random stuff, but I am easily bored. And I think I was watching The Apprentice, filling up time, and I think it said, apply. And I thought, oh, that's something to do. I'll apply. So I applied. I went to the first audition, and it was something for me to do in my diary. So I thought, oh, okay, I'll do that. And I mean, I subsequently went through a lot of auditions. And I mean, it was a great opportunity for me to do something and fill my diary with something to do. And then I got on and I was like, holy shit. I'm not 100% sure I want to do this. So I'm super, super glad I did it. I mean, I don't regret it. I would do it again. And I think everybody who's ever done The Apprentice would say the same. And it's definitely a unique opportunity to do things that you haven't ever had to do. I mean, at this stage, I've designed a shoe. I mean, I can't even think. I've actually legitimately made donuts in a bakery, which is always exciting. I do some other stuff that I've always wanted to do and never had the opportunity to do. Tonight we're in an airline. I always wanted to be an air stewardess. I mean, it's quite an eye opener. And I mean, only 150 people in the world have actually gone through the process, and that in itself is pretty amazing.
Right, right. And I'm curious, have you already seen some impact from all the exposure that's come about?
I mean, it depends on what you mean by impact.
It could be just awareness, not necessarily sales, of course.
Yeah, I mean, everybody thinks I'm the best salesperson in the world, so that's helpful. I'm also slightly horrible because then everybody knows the inside scoop, so they're more wary. I think The Apprentice is what it is. It's an entertainment show. I mean, it's a bloody good one. I mean, I'm glued to the screen every night. But it is an entertainment show, and I wouldn't. I mean, I think I'm so, so glad I did it. But do I think that it's going to advance my career, especially with the product that I've got, which is very expensive and very niche? Not necessarily, but I certainly can say that a lot more people know about it, you know, that would never have heard about me, would never have heard about my wine. So in a sense, absolutely, it gives you a huge platform. I mean, it's one of the biggest television shows in the UK, and I'm incredibly grateful to be a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what are the future plans for Rebel Pie in the next half a year, and maybe if you have thought about it in the longer term?
So we are obviously we're holding back a couple bottles to keep a vertical, but we anticipate we'll sell our 1,600 bottles before Christmas, because Christmas is a great time to sell a dessert wine. And I'm really looking at expanding the range. At the moment, we have one bottle of Roussanne. We'll be looking at potentially expanding the range to include a pre-packaged drink, which is a sparkling wine and ice wine mixed together. Kind of like an alcopop, but much more high-end and much more luxurious. And we'll be expanding it beyond the UK. So UK was our first market, but we're looking at breaking into Asia, America, and everything in 2019.
So where can people go and find out more about Rebel Pie and you, and where they can watch more of you?
I'm on The Apprentice tonight and every Wednesday night for the foreseeable future on BBC One. If you're outside of the UK, I think if you look at Daily Motion, that's an option. Rebel Pie, I massively would encourage you to go on our website. It's got lots of information about what ice wine is about, how to pair it, how to drink it, why you should be drinking it. It's exceptional. You can also order it on www.rebelpie.com. So all of our bottles at this point are sold on our website. If you are international, give me a shout personally at info@rebelpie.com. I can sort you out. And that's kind of everything. I've got a personal website as well. If you want to keep in touch, I've been writing blogs about business on a reflection of The Apprentice, and that can be found on www.jackiefast.com.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you enjoyed it and found it valuable, we would really appreciate your support by liking, rating, subscribing to the Early Days podcast. This program is produced and hosted by Dulo, that's me and Julian. And as we mentioned in the very beginning, we make non-iron dress sheets from performance fabrics. If you want to learn more, head over to weardulo.com, that's weardulo.com, and take a look at our products, our story, and the journey of how we're building the business. Until next time, bye-bye.